Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of The Tangles, official companion podcast of BeneathTheTangles.com. I am your host, JP, known affectionately, or not, online as Japes and Japesland.
And I'm your co-host, Sean.
I've been very excited for this month's episode because, like last month, we actually have four members today. Besides Sean and myself, you probably all know our next member.
Hi everyone, this is Charles, or TWWK. I'm the administrator of Beneath the Tangles, and I'm glad to be back on, especially for this episode. And that's because I'm very delighted to introduce our guest for the podcast, who's a good friend both to Japes and myself, and someone we've had many a discussion with and collaboration with in the past, and that is Alexander. Welcome, Alex. Will you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, everyone. My name's Alex. I sometimes go by the internet handle Lord Marlin, or just Marlin. I have been an Annie blogger for quite many years. My main blog is Anime of Tomorrow. The URL is ashtanoanime.wordpress.com. I haven't been updating as much as I would really like to, but it's just a matter of work and other interests taking up my time. So what I've mainly been doing over the past 2 years now, it's going to be 2 years this June, I think, is I've been running a Tumblr. That is affinityforanime.tumblr.com. And on that blog, I make custom Magic the Gathering cards with an anime twist to them. And I've been having a lot of fun with that. That's kind of been my outlet for reviewing anime to some extent, and also just kind of commenting on one of my favorite games, Magic the Gathering. And I also tried to do some work on Twitter as well, mostly trying to keep up with some of my personal life, personal interests, and anything else that I just kind of think is funny. I try to keep all that separate from my blogging, just kind of compartmentalize stuff. So if you're ever interested in kind of what I'm doing or what my other interests are, I'm also on Twitter at affinity4anime.
I heard you mention Magic cards before we started, and I wondered if you were referring to Magic the Gathering. It's been, man, it's been ages since I used to play that game with my next door neighbor back when I lived in Florida, and he was just ruthless. He was very good, and I had never played it before, and he would just invite me over and destroy me again and again.
That's what happens.
Yeah, so my sojourn into the world of Magic didn't last long.
But aside from anime, Magic the Gathering, and video games, I do a lot of other stuff too. I'm a big ice hockey fan. Go Red Wings.
Nice.
Other than that, I also enjoy reading manga or just reading books in general. I've been catching up on the new Game of Thrones season is out, so that's keeping me busy.
What was that sound you made, Charles?
That was a
That was the sound of him getting stabbed in the back and betrayed.
Well, yeah. Next week's episode.
Your throne has been usurped. Goodbye.
But I have pretty diverse interests, and I think that I've gone on long enough about me. So how about we just go ahead and get this show rolling?
Well, let's move on from you and talk about you some more, Alex. Because seeing as how The Tangles is a podcast devoted to exploring Christian spirituality and philosophies of art and life, as well as otaku culture, would you also be able to share with us for a few minutes some of your personal religious beliefs?
All right. So I guess we can move on to something that's a little bit more specific instead of just me rambling about all of my interests, which are quite varied. But as far as my spiritual beliefs go, I am an atheist. I make no qualms about that word. But one of the things that some atheists, myself included, don't like the label, not because of some of the baggage that comes with it, but because of kind of what it means. All that being an atheist entails is not believing in a God. And that doesn't say anything about what you do believe. So if somebody asks me what I am, I don't typically lead with atheist. I lead with humanist. I'm a humanist. That's what I am. That's what I do believe. It's not what I don't believe, which is what atheism is. And humanism for me basically entails we are all a community of people, and we need to help each other out because that's all that we can rely on to help each other out. We can only rely on other people. There's no higher power. The world is just the world. It is nature. It is not always nice to us. We have natural disasters that we need to help each other on. We have social problems that we need to help each other on. And there's also just this idea that we need to move the humanity forward. And humanism is just that philosophy of working to better humanity.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting intersection between Christianity and humanism to some degree. I do very much respect your decision to associate with something you do believe as opposed to something you don't believe, however. That's something I know, especially whenever we talk about, I'm in these conversations a lot, Japanese religion. A lot of them like to label Japanese religion as atheism. However, it's a lot deeper than that, because atheism covers a pretty wide spectrum. I mean, you can be an atheist and still be a Buddhist. Or any other number of religions, really, as long as it doesn't believe in a god. Fair game.
Yeah, and I think that distinction is very important as well. I'm glad you brought it up. I was probably going to bring it up at some point if you didn't, but just, defining yourself with a negative is, like you said, it doesn't really say anything. It doesn't really establish anything. Defining yourself by what you are actually allows for discussion and discourse, and a lot of what you just said or, you ascribe to your beliefs is something that is held in common by many people, whether or not they go to the point of ascribing it to a higher power or a creator, or whether they say that nature is all that there is and that whatever the forces of nature are, that's what we have to work with and that's what we have to work around. Nevertheless, there's a lot of crossover between nature religions and pure systems of philosophy that do not ascribe anything to a god, and then even, the more traditional monotheistic faiths. So it's a pretty interesting intersection. I think you see a lot of that in history as well, like the founding of America, and a lot of discussion around, were the founding fathers Christians? Were they deists, or were they humanist, some combination thereof? And, I don't think it's as clear cut as people always tend to ascribe America to being, America's a Christian nation and we're founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And there's a case that can be made for that, but there's also a strong case of the brotherhood of mankind and unity and building society and, as you said, progressing forward. So, I appreciate you making that clarification for us.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, thanks, Alex. I always really like having the diversity of guests we have here. It's in a Christian podcast, if we want to associate ourselves with that label. It's nice to have, I guess, other Christians and be able to talk about those religious topics that only Christians, I think, fellow Christians can totally understand. Would that be appropriate?
the minutiae of theology.
Yeah. But man, it's so much more fulfilling to talk to people who don't believe what you believe. People who believe in something radically different, or maybe just share some of what you believe. That's what really gets the interesting discussion going.
Yeah, I was sure to mention that a lot of the great conversations I've had the last few years have actually been with Alex about our very very different beliefs and backgrounds, and I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And wow. I think, go ahead, Alex.
I've enjoyed our conversations too. We've sometimes reached impasses where it just kind of. Okay, well, that's all we're going to be able to go. But I still think that even for me, it's a two-way street. We're kind of keeping each other sharp on what we know about the world, what we want to believe, what we think, how things are going. So there is definitely that aspect to it where we need that back and forth of not always preaching to the choir, so to speak, that is having a little bit of a dissenting opinion, especially a civil dissenting opinion, because you can get into way too many shouting matches on the internet.
Oh yeah.
And if you'll forgive the quotation of scripture in a discussion that is talking about cross religious or a-religious grounds, come let us reason together. So I think the concept of a sheep mentality, which unfortunately the Bible itself even tends to describe the believers of the Bible as having a sheep-like mentality, which is not a compliment. to break out and go beyond that into question and have a defense for what you believe. And you can't really do that if you sit around and preach to the choir and have little discussions among friends that all share the same opinion. Because one of the greatest difficulties I would say humanity faces right now, talking about moving humanity forward, and moving our understanding as well as our culture forward, is we have a huge dissonance in our understandings of the universe. We had long periods of human history where these cultures grew in isolation and then had trade and exchange over time and we built up. But we've had enough time in isolation that so many parts of the world have radically different belief systems, which leads to all kinds of fighting. And, you know, it's very relevant today with all the wars in the Middle East between the monotheistic phase and involving a lot of people who have no religious persuasion. And I mean, if we're going to get beyond that kind of bloodshed and violence, then you really have to get to the core of, well, what are you actually saying? You know, get beyond dogma, get beyond religious precepts, and break through that terminology that has grown stale and just understand, what are you actually saying? What do you really believe? And, you know, that's what excites me about conversations like this is, you know, a lot of times discussing with someone who is an atheist or an agnostic or whatever have been really fruitful for me, because I realize, okay, you're describing this in terms of science and progress and the natural laws, and I'm using, you know, some spiritual terminology. But if you stop and you think about what we're really saying, it's identical. So, you know, that's what excites me, is like, maybe we can get beyond the labels and we're actually in agreement. And, you know, that's my angle and what I really like about these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, this is why I love having Sean as the co-host. Well, if you've been keeping up with our social media, you probably know what we're doing in this particular podcast episode. However, before we jump into that topic this month, which we'll reveal, it's time for our announcements.
I'll go ahead and give the announcements for us. You know, we've been pretty active lately. We've had a lot of stuff going on, new updates, new features. Nothing for this month, though. So, but I will say that there's something we're kind of associated with that's launching Friday. So tomorrow, the day after this podcast airs, and that's Lauren Orsini, who runs the Taku Journalist blog and was a guest on our first episode. She's publishing an ebook called Build Your Anime Blog: How to Get Started, Stand Out, and Make Money Writing About What You Love. And actually, Beneath the Tangles is one of the features in that book. One of the chapters, she interviewed me a few months ago for it. So I would encourage you all to go to Amazon and perhaps purchase that book if you're interested. Otherwise, the other big announcement we have, I'm going to go ahead and let JP talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can't remember if I've been mentioning this in our last episodes, and I furthermore can't remember if I've edited it out if I have mentioned it the last couple episodes.
I think you mentioned at least once that you would be
okay
going.
Well, if I did, you'll be hearing it again with more detail. So this summer, actually, as of 1 week exactly from the airing of this podcast episode, I will be going to the land of Nippon. I will be headed to Japan for a 3-month internship where I will be working at a small university on the West Coast, primarily teaching English, but potentially playing saxophone. And all of this will be happening at a small Christian campus. However, one thing you have to keep in mind is the spiritual state of Japan, as we may have kind of implied earlier, is very, very different from the United States. While Christianity has had a pretty significant and lasting influence on the country, especially in academics, the country still ascribes to be about 99% non-Christian. So, perfect example, the university where I'll be going is a Christian university in name, and in some of the faculty as well. However, many of the students there, in fact, probably about 99%, same as the general population, would not ascribe to be Christians. So what I'll be doing for the next few months, and we have not decided how many months this is yet, because I'll be in Japan, it'll be a little difficult to carry out the same Tangles formula as the producer and editor myself. We'll be changing the formula up, and I'll be doing a little bit of kind of an audio blog where I'll be talking about my experiences in Japan, and that will be relatively comprehensive of what I'm doing. So just don't be surprised next month when you don't hear some of the same voices besides my own. There are going to be some interesting surprises this summer, I think. I don't want to spoil anything, but I think you'll enjoy it. And so just look forward to our next couple episodes of The Tangles. However, moving on past our announcements, this month, because of the particular members of our show, we've been asking through the Beneath the Tangles and our connected social media for questions for everyone in the episode except for me. I'll be moderating. These questions, if you've seen them, are going to steer the entire episode. And because of this variation from our normal schedule, we'll be skipping both our Otaku Diet and our Listener Mail sections. Now, over the course of the rest of the episode, I'll be moderating reader and listener questions that cover topics from anime to religion. Because of the number of questions we received and our limited amount of time, unfortunately, we won't be able to cover everyone's submissions, but we're extremely thankful for everyone who asked, and we hope that you'll continue to submit your questions for future podcasts' listener mail portions. So without further ado, our first question for the podcast is aimed at all three of you guys, and I might actually give my own answer, too. The question comes from CAM Inc. at camink.tumblr.com, regular listener of the podcast. His question is, quite simply, what's your favorite anime of spring 2015? So, Charles, why don't you start us off?
Sure. I'm watching a variety of series, but the one I'm enjoying most is the new season of Oregairu, or my teenage rom-com Snafu 2, T-O-O, of course, not T-W-O. That's
your pick, really?
Yeah, oh yeah, and by a long shot, actually.
Wow.
Because, I guess it's been a couple of years since the first season aired, and I didn't really remember it too well. I just remember I really enjoyed it. But then this new season, there's been a lot of plot development. I'm really enjoying that, and I'm enjoying it all the more because my wife has been watching along with me, which is she's been getting into anime lately, and so it's been fun watching the first season over with her, and now she's finally caught up. So that's my answer, at least until the new season of Digimon airs. And that's not a joke. That's for real, because I love the first season of Digimon, and they're bringing all the characters back a little bit older. So I'm waiting for that. That's going to happen in a few days from
now. Man, carrying the torch. I haven't even thought about Digimon for ages. It's still around and kicking, huh?
it is, and it's being revived. So I'm real excited about that. That's my answer.
Hey, for what it's worth, Charles. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you for a second, Alex. I actually have been really enjoying that, too, that anime.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Snafu 2. I don't remember what it's actually called. I kind of went in the same thing. I was like, I don't really remember what happened for a season, but I remember liking it. I actually talked to Alex, I think, a good bit when that season was airing, about the kind of unique protagonist. And, season 2 has been kind of surprisingly good.
You know, also the animation is so much better this season. I was talking to one of our writers, Goldie, about it, and I was saying, there's so much more definition in their faces and so forth. And I was wondering if it was this good the first season. Then I would start rewatching the first season, and nope, it was terrible, right? So they've they've invested a lot more money this season, which has been nice.
Switch studios?
I don't know. That's your thing. You know this.
I
just enjoy it.
That's what I heard.
What were you gonna say, Alex? Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all right. I just kind of was going to challenge Charles a little bit to kind of clarify what it is exactly that he likes about Oregairu, because I watched, I think, the first 5 episodes of the first season. Everybody was talking about how good it was, and I was just kind of with it. I was just totally losing interest in it and did not finish the first season.
Well, obviously, I liked it because you didn't like it. We have
we're setting a good precedent here, guys.
I think we've talked about this many times. I think maybe 90%. There's like a 90 percentile thing here, where if I like something, Alex doesn't, or vice versa. The main character is a downer in every sense of the word. He has a really unique view on life. It's very It's a very wordy series. He's always thinking, always talking. I can't understand a lot of what he's talking about. I don't get it. I have to think about what he's saying. And then the episode, I mean, the show has pretty good character dynamics. So you have your kind of your typical slate of characters, but they're not what they seem at most of them, they're not what they seem at first glance. You have the popular kid who's not really the great guy everyone thinks he is necessarily, but he's not a bad guy either. He's just complex. And I like that in my kind of rom-com series. You know, my favorite series of all time is Toradora. And the reason for that is because you have these deeper kind of complexities to these characters. So it's kind of the same lines with this series.
Okay, I just kind of want to clarify. I didn't hate Origaido. I just was kind of neutral on it. And I have to love an anime to stick with it.
Yeah.
And I didn't love it. I didn't hate it either. I thought it was just fine.
Sounds like I'm in Alex's camp here. I mean, I haven't seen any of it, but just based on what you just said, that's pretty much how I am. Like, if I watch two episodes of something, I'm like, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there.
Hey, so originally I think I was going to go next, but I think I've decided off the cuff that I want Sean to go next.
You want me to go next? Okay, all right. Well, I am only watching one anime this season, so I don't really have a whole lot of choice in the response to this question. So my favorite anime of spring 2015 is the second season of Fate Stay Night Unlimited Blade Works, which I am absolutely obsessed with and love it very much. I actually did try to watch quite a few other shows this season. I just went on like my anime list and just read through all the summaries and watched at least one episode of everything on there, and I didn't like anything except Unlimited Blade Works, as I've already been following that through Fate Zero. But I love the art, obviously. The art style in particular, the fight scene animation is great, but the thing that really gets me with the Fate series is I love world building probably more than I love characters. So I tend to not get into rom-coms and situational type stuff and character interactions as much. I'm more interested in the characters in their place in the world and how they interact and what the world tells us about the characters. I mean, it's always good to have great characters, but if I had to choose between the two, I would take a fantastic world over fantastic characters. As long as they're not horrid. As long as they're at least acceptable, then, you know, that's good enough for me to give it a go. But in the case of Unlimited Blade Works, for me, it's been something really special. I got into the whole Fate franchise a little late, and so I'm kind of watching and reading it all in one go. I actually just got into the visual novel, too, which is a big first for me. I've never read a visual novel, so I started with Fate, and I've been watching through the series, and I love everything that Ufotable's been doing with that franchise, so that's my pick for spring.
Well, the reason... sorry, do you guys have any comments on that before I go? All right, I'm just going to go.
Don't be bashful, baby. Go ahead.
I think I was pressuring Charles because I kind of wanted a little bit more explanation as to why he liked Origaido. He just said that he liked it and he liked the previous season. But I think that you sufficiently explained to my satisfaction why you like Unlimited Blade Works. So, yeah, I wasn't going to pressure you there.
All right. Well, the reason I wanted Sean to go before me is my answer kind of involves his answer a little. So, when we started the season, my number one hands-down anime was Plastic Memories. Basically, it was like, to me, Time of Eve plus Moe, and why would you not want either of those things?
And you wrote me into watching the first three episodes.
And then I got Sean to watch it, and then it got worse. So, yeah, it dropped out of my my number one slot, because episode one was great, episode two was good, episode three was like, what? What's going on here? I thought I was watching something awesome. We'll see, it could redeem itself. So then I deferred to what was my number one, which was Fate Stay Night, because that's just kind of the go-to series this season, I think. However, my number one right now actually just changed the other day with episode 3 of Ore Monogatari, which is my love story. I watched episode 1, and what were your words, Charles? It's like, it was so adorable, but I don't know if I can take a season of this.
Right, yeah, that's pretty much what I said.
I kind of more or less had the same thought, and I was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to watch the whole series, but I think Kaze was the one who convinced me to keep going, and episode 2 was good. I liked it quite a lot, but you know what? Episode 3 actually knocked my socks off. Have you seen it?
JP, you do realize if I go and watch this because of what you said, and I get to episode 3...
You're not going to like it. It doesn't matter.
Don't. Yeah.
Charles, have you seen episode 3?
Don't ruin it for me, because I'm about to watch it as soon as this podcast ends.
Okay, I won't ruin it. I won't ruin it. I won't say more, but I will say a little bit more that's ambiguous. That, like, That series, I'm going to just say the English because I can't stand to say the Japanese without saying proper Japanese. And if I say it properly, it sounds weird in an English conversation. My love story, it starts off as classic love triangle shoujo. And within three episodes, they basically accomplish what, like 50 episodes of a classic, I just lost the word I just used a second ago. Love triangle shoujo does. And I won't say anymore because I don't want to spoil it for you, Charles. But I'm impressed with it.
Ye old love triangle.
All right, how about you, Alex?
Yeah, I actually just finished watching Ori Monogatari this first episode this morning before work. And shoujo series kind of have a love-hate relationship with me because they typically don't have endings that I like. So I kind of steer away from them unless they seem really, really good from the get-go. And episode one just did not pull me in sufficiently to for me to keep going with it.
Yeah, I mean, episode one's pretty generic. I'd give it at least three episodes, though, for what it is, before you make a final judgment on it. But that's neither here nor there.
All right, so I kind of wanted to go last on this question because my answer to it is a little bit more complicated and longer. Usually, I find that every season, there tends to be an anime that just kind of gravitates immediately as being a really good candidate for number one. Like last season, just no question, Death Parade was just as high and above everything else. Absolutely, no doubt, number one. You know,
phenomenal show.
No, but this spring 2015 is just... nothing's really knocking my socks off so far, and I've watched just about everything that, like, from the summaries would suggest that it's going to be something I'd watch. I still have a few more series to check out just to make sure I'm not missing some kind of sleeper hit that kind of snuck past the people who write these descriptions, but... really, it's kind of a toss-up for me between a couple of anime that I'm really excited to watch. I think I can narrow it down to three and prevent it from getting a little bit too long-winded. The first one is the second season of one of my favorite moe anime of all time, Kinyuro Mosaic. The second season, Kinyuro Mosaic.
Yeah, I'm watching that too. Sorry, go on.
Silence, GP.
Now I kind of talk about this a little bit more elsewhere, but I'll mention it again here. Kinyuro Mosaic really kind of, it's your cute moe anime, you're all female cast, and they're just having their general cute school life, and it's nice and heartwarming. But for me, it has kind of another extra layer that kind of hits home for me because I spent the last 4 years of my life teaching English in Japan, and I can see a lot of parallels in this anime about English education in Japan. There's a lot of like English jokes about the difference between English and Japanese in this anime that were just kind of a natural thing that came out of my own teaching English. So it's kind of a way for me to get back to feeling that English side of my job that I had in Japan. And I'm a moe fanboy. I make no qualms about that. I watch pretty much every moe series every season. But Kinyuro Mosaic is one of the series that I really look forward to the new episodes every week.
If you don't mind me butting in for just a second, that series is probably the series I'm most link to my Japanese friends. Just random like pictures from it, and they're all Karen. Because Karen just has the best lines, I think, ever.
Yeah.
And des.
Yes. I think I kind of gravitate a little bit more toward the relationship between Shinobu and Alice because Shinobu is a Japanese person who likes all things foreign, and Alice is a foreign person living in Japan who likes all things Japanese. And I kind of get that because I was a foreigner in Japan who likes all things Japanese. So I kind of can identify with those two girls a little bit as well.
Yeah, I get that.
So the next series that I look forward to the new episodes of every week is The Disappearance of Nagato Yuki-chan.
Mm.
Another moe anime. I'm really liking it because it is not what I expected it to be. So we had like the main Suzumiya Haruhi series, which is just kind of off the wall, crazy, all kinds of wild stuff going on. So it's one of those anime that you almost could have expected could have been made by like Gainax or something back in the 90s. It was just so crazy. That's kind of how I characterize the main franchise of Suzumiya Haruhi. And then we kind of had like the little omake, 2 or 3 minute spin-offs that was like Suriya-chan and Suzumiya Haruhi-chan that were just kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So I was kind of expecting it to be one or the other, but it's neither. It's kind of like its own alternate universe, and I'm really enjoying this third kind of spin-off of the Suzumiya Haruhi franchise. So and it's got nice... I like how they've made Nagato Yuki the shy girl. And I always... That's one of the characters I always root for in romance anime is the shy girl.
Can I say that I'm rather enjoying the series too. But... not for the reasons you're liking it for, I don't think. There's just so much, you know, Haruhi fan service there where it's like, oh, yeah, I'm getting all these nostalgic feelings for the original series. But I feel like the purpose of this show is to have Nagato go from very shy to only a little bit shy. And I don't know if I can tune in for a whole season of that. But for now, I'm really enjoying all the, you know, just having my cast, you know, back again. It feels really rejuvenating.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It actually got me thinking about the original series again, and now I'm watching through it with my roommate.
All right. And the last series, before I get to the last series, I will mention that, yes, I'm enjoying Plastic Memories still. Yes, I'm enjoying Fate Stay Night and Limited Blade Works. And many, many other series. I tend to watch upwards of 10 anime every season. That's just how I roll.
Nice.
But the other series that the third series now that is really standing out for me that I'm looking forward to every week is it has a really long title. I'm going to say it's English title because even I kind of have a little bit of trouble pronouncing the Japanese title. It's Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in the Dungeon?
I can't even let you get through it, sorry.
Yeah, which on its just on its surface sounds so wrong.
Hestia is Bestia.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about my extent of understanding for that. Every time I log on the internet, Hestia is Bestia. I'm like, all right. I saw that joke so many times, I had to look it up.
I'm really enjoying, I'm just going to call it Dungeon.
That's, I'm good really, with that.
I'm really enjoying Dungeon because it's kind of reminiscent of a lot of those adventure anime. Like, I'm going to list Sword Art Online and Log Horizon, where you've got this adventure system. It's almost like an MMO in a way, or Dungeons and Dragons. You have this level up system, or like World of Warcraft, where you're playing an RPG that has a lot of references to that, and how that kind of is just a funny way of like making the real world into numbers. And I find that a very humorous way of looking at the world and looking at how these games kind of work. But it's also just really interesting from the character standpoint. I'm really enjoying seeing these characters grow and seeing them kind of get hurt and then kind of pick themselves back up. And I'm really enjoying seeing how this is going to develop. And it looks like it could be a really cool adventure.
Does that have any similarity to, what was the name of that? The World God Only Knows. Weren't you into that for a little while, JP?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that like a video game kind
of... Nah, it's...
I mean, I don't know. I could be talking outside of my head.
I think you're talking outside of your head, Sean.
World God Only Knows has more references to games directly. It's like this directly referencing games. Dungeon is just its own world. It doesn't reference any other source. It's just like character stats are just a real thing in this world. It's not,
that's kind
of
funny,
it's not some kind of video game or a spinoff of a video game that is kind of making light of it. It's just
so they created an actual fictional universe incorporating like a Dungeons and Dragons style world, but made it the actual thing. That's
yeah, but you can actually read people's stats in this world.
That'd be convenient if you could actually do that. save me many troublesome encounters.
So those are my three: Hello, Kinara Mosaic, Disappearance of Nagano Yuki-chan, and Dungeon.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there's just not anything right now that I can say is definitively my number one.
Well, you definitely made the most of an underwhelming season. Because most of those sound at least moderately interesting, but everything I've seen this season's been questionable. Well, except for Fate, but I'm predisposed.
Well, I mean, between the four of us, we got a pretty wide diversity of titles there. pretty cool anyway. Well, we're definitely going to need to move on in the interest of time. Yes. So we're going to go to question two. No, that's totally fine. We're going to go to question two. This is, again, for all three of you guys. I'm not going to answer this one. And this is kind of a mixture. This is going to transition us into our more spiritual/religious questions. So this question is from Warriors at the Disco at warriorsatthedisco.tumblr.com. I'm going to read his question verbatim. Anime that used religion/religious symbols well? Not well. LOL, I can't think of any questions. Why don't we go ahead and start with Charles, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it, Charles.
I should also say that Warriors at the Disco is a she named Jordan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jordan.
Just because I want her to continue submitting questions, right? So, I was thinking about this. And, what we do on the blog is we dig up a lot of Christian ideas and themes that are nowhere physically, present in anime, at least at first glance, and certainly not intentionally. And we don't really look into series that purposely use, Christian metaphors or symbolism. So, I don't know, Evangelion, is that good or bad? I don't know.
Both. Simultaneously.
Actually, I would agree with that. At one point in my life, I was, I was like that kind of, spiritual milk Christian who had watched Evangelion and loved it. That was really the anime that really drew me into the world of anime. And I purchased it and I was like, oh, this is so unholy. And I sold it to my roommate, my whole collection. And then
this is so unholy. Here you have it.
Yeah. And then years later, I was like, why did I sell this series? There's good and bad to that. It's a fun series. The one that immediately comes to mind, though, is something good, is Haibane Renmei. I think a lot of us could, probably a number of us agree with this series. There's a, it takes place in an afterlife, very reminiscent of maybe Purgatory, although Abe says that it's not any specific afterlife, but I think that's the one that obviously resembles. It digs into ideas like sin, guilt, grace, almost as good or better than anything I've watched. Haibane Renmei does a really great job with that, digs into a lot of things that I see as spiritual truths from a Christian angle. That would be automatically my pick there.
How about you, Sean?
Man, I've got quite a few, so maybe I guess I'll just list them off and maybe talk about what I found in a couple of them. But I would say Zammed of the Lost Memories is a great series for spiritual content. Ergo Proxy is a mixture of philosophy and metaphysics and spirituality, and it has some very interesting references to Christianity and some existential philosophies as well. Fate Zero and Fate Stay Night. I mean, those are kind of that's kind of in a category like I would put with Evangelion. They blatantly use Christian symbolism to be cool or to be hip and not necessarily to be deep. But I feel like there are merits to both of those series, that there is good depth. I mean, I know quite a few people have written PhD discourses on Evangelion, so it's not wholly without merit. And as far as Fate goes, well, the original visual novel is longer than the Bible, so you would hope there'd be something worthwhile in there. But, you know, I find it to be a good use of symbolism overall. Full Metal Alchemist, my personal favorite series of all time, of any genre, and particularly the movie Sacred Star of Milos. Gankatsuo, it's basically the Count of Monte Cristo. I forget what the actual
space vampires.
Count of the Cave or something like that. Yeah.
Space vampires.
I did have Haibane Remne in there as well. Nausicaa also, and that's yes, timely correct. Because JP just put out an article on the messianic symbolisms and metaphor in Nausicaa. Madoka Magica, gotta have that. And then Monster is a series that the last series I had listed that maybe not all are familiar with it. Basically follows a surgeon. It's kind of like The Fugitive, if you've ever seen The Fugitive series on television or the movie with Harrison Ford, a wrongly accused doctor on the run. And the twist to this is he's actually healed someone who at the time he did not realize was a mass murderer, basically a sociopath. And so the way that the story sets it up is that this person is like his alter ego. It's all the things he wishes he could do when he gets frustrated but would never actually do. And he chases this man all around the world, and there's a very strong dynamic of the Gospels, of the main doctor being a Christ character and actually amassing a following of disciples going around and following this monster. And they actually start the series with a quote from Revelation about the beast and the monster of Revelation. And so that is a series that doesn't hit you over the head with biblical reference, but demonstrates biblical concepts throughout. And so I would say that's probably one of the better examples of Christian symbolism anime that I've seen. As far as not good, stuff like Hellsing or Angel Beats or something like that, where it's just kind of like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, it's set in this quasi-religious or spiritual setting. Anything where, like, the Catholic Church is evil and they all secretly practice witchcraft and just, like, you know, I mean, it's entertaining, but it's not a good use of symbolism. It's just patently ridiculous. So anything that kind of falls into that vein, or maybe some of the old violent 80s exploitationist stuff like Devil City or Dark City, I can't remember exactly what it is, but anything that takes a religious concept and then uses it for perversion or overt sexuality is really an inversion of the purpose of the symbolism in the first place. So those sorts of things I tend to have a lot of distaste for. So
unless it's a fertility goddess.
I mean, that's more or less the list I can think of from the things that I've seen.
How about you, Alex? I mean, you're coming from a different perspective, obviously.
Well, of course. Kind of one of the first things that I kind of gravitate to in this question is that Warriors of the Disco said religion, not Christian symbols. Mm-hmm. So I think of kind of all religious symbols in as up for fair game in this question, you know. So
yeah,
I'm not just looking at the Bible or Christianity when I was considering this question. Like Sean was just talking about, there are many different categories of religious symbolism in anime, and I kind of compiled a list of all the anime that I've watched that I can think of that have religious symbols, and I kind of made some categories that maybe we can, I want to just kind of talk about a little bit here first. One of the ones that you were really talking about first, and this is a really big catch-all theme, is where gods, they're like, or religion or afterlife themes are just kind of general themes of the anime. Like we were talking about Angel Beats or Haibane Renmei or even Suzumiya Haruhi to some extent has those god ideas in it, or even Death Parade from last season.
Children Who Chase Voices from Below is another one. They actually mix a lot of different cultural concepts of the underworld or the afterlife in that one. So yeah, something like that as well.
So it's just the actual general theme of the anime is about religion or gods or something that pertains to that, like the afterlife or purgatory or something along those lines. The other one, the other big one that I was thinking about is where the church, usually explicitly the Christian church, is a major plot point of the anime. And kind of things that I'm thinking about that are Index.
Yeah, yes, I was gonna
where one of the main antagonists of the series is specifically the Catholic Church. Another one that I can think of is Helsing, where you explicitly have the Church of England battling the Roman Catholic Church, and you got vampires and demons kind of caught in between and whatnot.
Crusade would be another example.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then there's also anime where it's not explicitly the Catholic Church, but you're just making references to where there is a church in the anime that kind of makes references to the Catholic Church or Christianity in general, but it's not Christianity. It's kind of its own religion. I kind of lump that into this category where church is a major plot point, and those are like Mayu Mayusha, where the church in that anime has a very vested political interest in perpetuating the war so that they can keep the belief of people strong.
Spice and Wolf, maybe. Similar.
Not exactly. Spice and Wolf. The church is leading crusades, and they sell armor, and Kraft Lawrence kind of gets caught up in their politics.
Maria the Virgin, which I don't know the Japanese, but didn't that feature? That was more recent. Last season.
That's been Kaze's baby recently.
Oh yeah, he wrote a couple articles on that, didn't he?
That's another one.
Yeah, tweeted the original mangaka and et cetera, et cetera.
And I also thought about some video games in here as well, like the Tales series, like Tales of the Abyss, where there's a very explicitly a church of whatever goddess in that series that is a major plot point or whatnot. And another category that I was thinking of where the church is just kind of, it explains the setting. Like in Nanoha, like Magical Girl Nanoha, or F, A Tale of Memories, or Sword Art Online, there are orphanages, and a lady who's dressed as a nun just happens to run the orphanage, and that's kind of explains the setting. Oh, it's an orphanage. It's run by the church, and that's all it goes into.
I would say, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alex.
Okay. And the last category I'm kind of long-windedly getting around to is Demon Slayer anime, of which there are so many that's too many to list. I'm thinking of a couple like Blue Exorcist or Tokyo Ravens or Helsing again. So some of these kind of fit into multiple categories. So we kind of have, let me go over the categories that I thought of again. So we have where the first category is where the general theme of the anime is religion. The second category is where the church is a plot point. The third category is where the church is just used as a theme to explain the setting of a particular area. And the last category is like demon slaying. And so you got all these kinds of different symbolism, and I'm kind of getting to the answer to the question now is anime that use it good, use it poorly. Well, for me, any kind of religious symbolism is not good or bad. It's just on its own. What is it trying to do? Is it trying to specifically make a reference to a real world thing, or is it taking a real world thing and doing its own spin on it? As an atheist, I'm kind of indifferent to the whole thing because it's all just kind of like any kind of general RPG can take references from Roman or Greek or Norse mythology. That's kind of like the general RPG formula, and just pull those ideas in and craft its own thing. And one of the things that I'm a big fan of the Persona games, and one of the things that Persona 3 did is it actually put Jesus on the same level as Odin and Zeus and Thor and Vishnu and Jormungand and all these other gods, because of course I don't believe that Jesus or Yahweh or whoever you prescribe to, I don't believe these are real. So I thought that that was a very good fair, it was a more fair playing field that a lot of media doesn't do. You almost have to get into a non-Christian setting to get that kind of equality, and that's why I like anime so much. When it does make these religious references, it doesn't elevate Christianity as taboo. Oh no, you can't mess with that. You can't joke about that. So as an atheist, I kind of appreciate that it's not taboo in Japan to make these kinds of playful references and use that as a plot device.
Well, if I can just like interject something real quick, I think that what you just said, Alex, is a really interesting angle to look at it. This is kind of my shtick. You probably don't know because we're just meeting tonight, but I'm writing a book on Greek. Well, I'm actually writing a trilogy of books, but the first one is on pretty much all of the epic poetry of Babylon, Assyria, Egypt, Greece, and Rome. And as prep for that and research, I've read pretty much every surviving complete work of epic poetry or tragedy from all those cultures. I just kind of got a rough chronology and plowed through it. And so what you said, the equality of the symbolism and getting past, you know, well, from your perspective, putting Jesus on a pedestal or Yahweh on a pedestal and discussing it openly with all these other traditions, you know, I actually I'm not opposed to that at all. I actually think that's great to do. And what actually irritates me is not that jabs are taken at the Christian church, but really, especially in anime for some reason, when the jabs are taken more often than not, they're ridiculous caricatures of the Catholic Church, not even necessarily the teachings of the Bible, but just more of some of the excesses that the Catholic Church has taken and then just taking that to an extreme and creating a world. You know, a lot of it's demon slaying and the Catholic Church is secretly using magic and sacrificing children or whatever. They're fighting demons. And I feel like that's actually not very productive as far as satire. So to me, it's kind of entertaining on a base level, but to me, it's kind of pointless if you're really trying to critique someone who is religious or spiritual. Because it's like a straw man, you know what I mean? Like anyone who actually is Christian, a practicing Christian or maybe a practicing Catholic or has a spiritual persuasion that includes those belief systems, they're just going to look at that and be like, that's ridiculous. Because, you know, no one actually believes that. It's just a caricature. It's just for fun. It's for entertainment. I actually think that shows like Maria, which I brought up, hit home and are a little bit more dangerous, per se, as far as like someone's bubble that's brought up in a Christian or a spiritual perspective. Because the church in Maria, the Virgin Witch, from what I've seen about half of it, and from what I've read about the rest of it, it's actually a lot closer to the actual historical church. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much of a caricature, so it's kind of like the kid gloves are off. It's like, we're not critiquing a caricature, we're critiquing the actual church. And I feel like that is actually more productive. So going off of what you said, bringing the symbols or the symbolism down to the level of all the other cultures and critiquing it and making it compete, even though I believe that if you make it compete, that Christianity comes out on top. Like, that's my personal belief. But I still think you should. I don't think you should just de facto say, I believe this and all your other culture is nonsense, or my religion is above all your other religions. You know, so no matter what you say, that's my preconception. I feel like you should read everything and make that call for yourself, you know, if you have the time or the proclivity and that's your interest. So shows that use symbolism like that, which is something like Zam Lost Memories that I brought up, it actually brings in a lot of very ancient, like Babylonian, Assyrian, and Egyptian death and rebirth mysteries, like Osiris and Horus, which is the ancient precursor to the whole Christ story. And it really treats that on a level of someone like Joseph Campbell. I don't know if you've read any Joseph Campbell works, but I mean, Joseph Campbell's not a Christian at all. He was agnostic, bordering atheist. I don't know if he ever came right out and said it. He was probably humanist. I think he was actually stated a humanist. And he didn't see anything special about Christianity or the Bible. He just said all cultures have these themes. They're common to human psychology throughout history and culture. And that's all it is. It's just us expressing ourselves artistically, and it's our culture. And something like Zam Lost Memories includes the motifs of death and resurrection and Christ types that a Christian would ascribe to Christ, but it does it in a cultural context that's relevant to actual history. And that's actually the kind of symbolism I like to see. So that's kind of when you brought up that that qualification of like what is good symbolism and what is not good symbolism. I would say a good use of symbolism is to actually give the context and make the symbols compete and give people understanding of human society as a whole so that we can progress, like understand our past and what we did and what we liked thousands of years ago so that we can progress in the future. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think a lot of anime does that. I mean, a couple and we all listed a couple. I feel like anime is still in an infant stage and it's getting much better and more refined, but a lot of religion in anime is a caricature.
I think that's kind of a misrepresentation in a way, because you're holding anime to almost too high of a standard in some ways, I think, because unless it is kind of explicitly part of the story to make some kind of competition about it, to make some kind of discourse about religion, like Junketsu no Maria did,
right.
Virgin Witch Maria, or something along those lines, I think that you're almost expecting too much of it. At its heart, anime is a source for it's a media for entertainment, and I think that as long as it's entertaining, that's fine by me.
Yeah, go ahead. I was actually going to kind of side with you, Alex. I mean, I think it's like, what are we looking for in anime, right? If you give me a good story where the Catholic Church is a bunch of vampire hunters and do magic, I'll watch it if it's entertaining, you know. If it's obviously a caricature, because what am I going into it for? You know, what's the audience? What's the idea behind the anime? You know, you know, you have to kind of put yourself in a different mode sometimes, and not based on necessarily what the setup is or what the ideology is behind it. Just because you use religious symbolism, I think we can't necessarily go into it expecting, okay, well, I need something that's deeper here. That's gonna go into some theology or give us some fundamental truths or something like that. Because you know, it's the same thing as Western entertainment too. That's we're just using these ideas to progress our plot. So while I appreciate shows that really give me and certainly, I mean, the shows I like most are the ones that give me some profound truths, things I can cling to, things I can write about on the blog. I'm not going to shy away from a show, even if it's religious in nature, just because it's goofy or it's not so serious, or it takes something that's serious to some people, but makes light of it. I might, but I think I'll give it a little bit of the benefit of the doubt based on the audience for the show.
Yeah, just call it a character flaw or maybe a quirk. I guess really it's just my expectation. Like, you're absolutely right. My expectations are high. And that's just because my personal philosophy of art, like, I mean, I've consumed a lot of disposable entertainment. It's not like I won't watch. I've watched a lot of stuff that's just goofy and silly, and I enjoy it too. You know, I'm not going to pretend that I don't, but having watched so much, I've just come to a point where, like, my standards just went up, because I was like, okay, this stuff is just never ending. It's a dime a dozen. There's a lot of fun, disposable things. They come and they go, and in 50 or 100 years, no one will even know they existed. And I'm sure that's gone on all throughout history with lots of books and things that have been written. But the things that really compel me are the things that last. And, you know, I've been reading through this whole tradition, so I've got all these classic works and things that have been around for thousands of years. And by analyzing that stuff, I've just come to understand, like, oh, okay, there's certain techniques that really last, and one of those, in my opinion anyway, is that a great work, and see, that's the flaw right there. I'm considering, like, anime could be a great work, which is what I want. That's what I want. I want anime to be a great work, so that's what I want, and that's why I go into it. But a great work teaches, you know, it's didactic. It teaches you about morality. It teaches you about society. It gives you values to build a civilization with, and it's like, yeah, it's just anime. Yeah, it's cartoons. But one of the things that drew me to anime in the first place was that I watched a lot of Western media and Western cartoons. I was like, this is retarded. Although there was some really good stuff, but on the whole, I was like, this is very childish. And then when I first got introduced to anime, I was like, wow, this is so intellectual and incredible. And then I grew up and I was like, okay, maybe it wasn't as great as I thought it was when I first got into it. But just the allure of having an animated production that was for a mature audience that could be great is what really got me into it in the first place. So, you know, I'll admit to that freely, but it's just something, it's something that I like to see, which is like in that list that I gave, like a lot of that stuff is like either would be considered pretentious by some or maybe overly wordy or philosophical and is not really in the crop of like Moe or, you know, Slice of Life at all. Like I can't even watch those shows. JP knows, like I try and I just like, it doesn't compute with my mind. I can't do it. But that's just because those are the kind of shows that I'm like, wow, they're actually, I go in just expecting a cartoon and to be entertained. And then every once in a while, it's like, whoa, wait, what are they doing with this? Are they actually trying to elevate this? Are they really going there? And I like those moments. So
yeah, I think,
go ahead.
Just to continue with what you're saying, I'm actually, my viewing habits are more along your lines, Sean, actually, despite what I said.
wait, what? Okay.
I'm playing devil's advocate. Who's the devil here? But the way I approach anime is I'm looking below the surface level, right? I want
beneath
something
the tangles, you might say,
in the series I'm watching. You could say that. So for instance, I mean, and I think you can find really great stuff even in a show that's all about, you know, that's Moe, you know, Slice of Life too. There's a lot to be taken, and you know. You can even take a series that may be anti-religious, right? I mean, like Maria, although I can't really comment on it because I haven't seen the show, but I'm thinking even maybe about Kino's Journey.
Oh, yeah.
I remember there's a specific episode that's pretty anti-religious where you have two kind of factions that are fighting it out. And I think the show's telling us something about religion specifically in that episode, right?
Oh, Kino's Journey is very humanistic, definitely.
Yeah. That series is so... every episode is so full of meaning, right? I don't care if the episode is specifically, and the show is not, but if there was an episode that was specifically anti-Christian, that's fine, right? If the show is telling me a lot of stuff about morality, like Sean said, or you know, even kind of day-to-day life struggle type stuff, if I'm getting something out of the show, I want to watch that. If you give me a show that's very positively Christian but has nothing, that no foundation beneath it,
yeah,
you know, if you have like Christian characters
vapidly optimistic
good,
or something, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like, please, you know, I'm going to drop the show in 5 minutes, right?
Sure.
Another example is... that I wrote about recently too is Trigun, where you have Wolfwood, who's a priest, right, or sort of a priest, and he's a very bad priest because he shoots and kills lots of people, but I love his character, right, and it's teaching me something, and it's teaching people something. And my article was about how Vash is a more faithful person than the Christian, you know, the supposedly Christian Wolfwood is, you know? And so even though that's, you know, anti-Christian in a sense, you know, I love that series. I love what it's teaching me because we're getting to something that's more important than just these religious symbols, which is fine and fun on a different level than what I think a lot of us are looking for in anime, and which anime has shown that it can do well, which is give us serious topics and be didactic, as Sean says.
I think we're going to have to end on that note. I think that was a pretty good conclusion for that question. but for the sake of time, we're going to move on to question 3, which is quite a doozy in several parts.
A monumental question.
So we're going to start with a question from Pray to Me Instead at praytomeinstead.tumblr.com. Does God have gender? Why can't people in hell repent? When did Lucifer fall? How did God rest on the fourth day when there was no sun? Why did God rest if he is never weary? Did Judas go to heaven or hell? Was Joseph transgender? So I'm guessing the basis of your questions is how literally do you interpret the Bible? This question actually ties in with another question we received from Lazarinth of fantasyandanime.wordpress.com. Lazarinth asks, some parts in anime transparently praise or trash religion, but do you ever feel that you are stretching your observation of certain anime to put a religious spin on it? And do you ever feel that maybe these views are not always shared by your other religious readers, even by those of the same faith? So Sean and Charles, which of you would like to start first on this? It's quite a doozy.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is a pretty good continuation after what we were just starting to talk about, which is interpretations and symbols and reading too far into things, because I think that's kind of where we were going with the last question. I mean, I've got a couple things written down. I can go through it like real quick, and then if we just want to like branch off discussion based on that, that's fine.
Sure, let's do that.
Okay, yeah, all right. So when I looked at this question when JP and I were looking over it, I kind of laughed and I said, this is basically like the catechism of stumbling blocks to ask a religious person who hasn't thought about their faith. Like, these are just like, these are the kinds of questions that you just like, you ask the typical person and their mind just explodes. You know what I mean? They're just like, wait, what? You know, it doesn't say anywhere. Judas, I don't know. And I know because I was asked these types of questions many times when I was younger. And I was like super adamant and not exactly well read. And I would get asked these things and it would always infuriate me. I'm like, you're missing the point. And it would make me really mad. You're making light of me, you know? But then I got older and I was like, well, you know, it's reasonable. You know, you should be able to answer these questions if you're going to espouse something that's in a book, and a book makes comments about these things. And that's kind of why we included that aside about how literally do you take the Bible? Because at my point in my faith right now, well, it's really paradoxical. I honestly can't get around it. But to me, it's both literal and figurative simultaneously. So I believe these things actually happen, but I also believe the actual point of the Bible is to give you metaphors and symbols that speak to human psychology.
And you're trying to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, no, I am. I mean, I won't shy away.
Go ahead.
I won't shy away from it at all. I mean, that's exactly it. I believe that the purpose of, or what it means for the Bible to be inspired, is that the inspiration is in the spirit of the words, not the literal meaning of the words. And honestly, that's really the only consistent thing I can personally say, having taken the time to read a lot of other cultures, religious persuasions, and, well, spiritual stories and poetry. Because once you start to do that, you start to see, okay, there are a lot of common threads here. And a lot of these common threads predate the Bible by several thousand years. So very quickly, the claim that the Bible is the one and only inspired word of God and all these other things are trash or pagan or dangerous went out the window when I started this reading. I said, I can't in good faith claim that about anyone, because a lot of these traditions are magnificent, and the poetry and the stories, and they really speak to the human nature and the human spirit and what these people went through and what they valued. So in light of that, you know, you really have to dig deeper and ask the question, what were the people who wrote the Bible trying to communicate when they wrote the Bible? I mean, it was written by people. You know, I think a lot of people have this conception that like God popped out of a cloud, like actual God with a long beard off a Family Guy came down out of a cloud and was like, okay, Isaiah, like, this is what's up. Write this down. And then shot some lightning bolts or whatever, a la Zeus. But I mean, the real fact of the matter is you have scribes, you have a tradition where these people wrote these words and stories down to instruct a specific people at a specific time. So the real question you should ask is that inspired? And what I mean by that is, does it relate to all people at all times? You know, is it relevant? And if so, then what does it mean? And so in that vein, you know, I'll just do a quick rundown of, you know, what I would answer to some of these questions. So the first one is, does God have a gender? And, you know, my answer to that is no, he doesn't have a gender. God doesn't have a gender. God creates gender. So in this sense, God is closer to a community or an organism. It's a functional entity rather than some kind of isolated individual, like a personified man in the sky, which a lot of cultures, you know, have as their go-to for God. And, you know, I think that just underscores and explains the presence and importance of family in the scripture. I mean, God is described as the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And if you dig into what the Holy Ghost is, the Spirit of God moving on the face of the waters, or the Spirit that, you know, not impregnated, but I guess fertilized Mary and like get and led to the virgin birth. That is, what is the meaning of that? Well, it's a Father, a Son, and a female principle. I mean, whether you want to call it a female is another point entirely, but it's a family. So why would they include family as important? Well, and why would they describe God as a community or as an entity that builds community? And to me, the answer for that is because it's a concept. It's the power of life. It's life itself. Or, you know, from a non-Christian or an atheistic perspective, it's just nature. It's just the universe. It's how things procreate. It's how the evolutionary cycle progresses. And And that holds up. That's not just biblical. That's in the Greco-Roman tradition. You have Cronus. You start out with Cronus and Uranus, and he's basically the god of time. And then over time, he spawns a family. And then he has a family rivalry, and they fight between the old gods and the new gods, which is something that, you know, is a very similar thing that you see in the Bible. You had the angels and seraphim created first, supposedly. Lucifer is the head of them. There's a rivalry. He tries to usurp God. They fight. Lucifer's cast down. I mean, that's the Greco-Roman tradition is very close to that. The Buddhist and Hindu tradition, you have the avatars and incarnations of Vishnu, which is a huge component of the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita. And basically, what they're saying is Vishnu, you can't even comprehend him. He's just cosmic might. He's the universe itself. So there's avatars that appear and guide the family of gods and the pantheon of gods, but what are they actually saying underneath all those words and parables? You know, they're trying to describe something that can't be described. So you have to use metaphor. That's the big problem. That's why I said it at the very beginning, and I prefaced it, it's a paradox. Like, you're trying to describe something you can't describe. So when you use words, if you just take the words literally, you're going to look like an idiot. And so I think, unfortunately, a lot of people do, and that leads to a lot of confusion. But to answer the question, not gender, but the power of generation. So, you know, in philosophy, you call it the prime mover, but it's basically just the desire to give birth, or the desire to have a family, to protect survival of the fittest, that whole thing. And I would say that the desire to build a family lies at the heart of what was, what is, and what will be in all of universal experience. And thus, while God has no biological gender, and the Bible says God's a spirit and you worship him in spirit and truth, even though he doesn't have a biological gender, that desire to build and perpetuate society and family is a masculine function. I mean, just, you know, and you can use it in the sense of a word can be masculine without actually describing a man. And so that's really the only answer I could give to God. It is the principle that drives, you want to say, evolution or advancement. It's directed evolution. It's an actual intelligence that is behind some kind of plan for what the universe is. And I mean, that's really as specific as you can get. If you start describing God as a man or a woman, you've kind of defeated the purpose of having a concept like God. So I'll just leave it at that. And then, you know, if we want to like go off of that, that's fine. But a couple of the other ones real quick, then I'll be quiet. sorry. These are like really hard questions. Or really involved questions. Let me say that. When did Lucifer fall? Okay. That's another class one. All right. My answer to that is he fell before the beginning of the book, before it starts. That's when he fell. Or in the parlance of theater, he fell off stage. So, you know, the thing about the Bible is it follows many conventions of epic poetry, actually all of them. It has a vast setting with universal conflict, and it's all about clashing nations and ideologies. Begins with an invocation of the muse, okay? In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. It's invocation of the muse. And a statement of the theme. The invocation and the theme are identical. Genesis 1:1. Contains long lists. Yeah, lots of long lists in Deuteronomy and Numbers, and catalogs of armies and formalized titles. All the 70 plus names of God are formalized titles to describe entities and all of the spiritual beings and all that. And then, of course, it features a heroic character descending to the underworld and saving the world, and or some kind of cycle of trials, which would be the Israelite people in the wilderness in the book of Judges. And I mean, you pretty much take that right out of English, like ninth grade English, and get that little list of what an epic poem is, and that's what the Bible is. And the most important thing about that is it communicates the values of the civilization it was written by. So in this case, the Hebrews. And lastly, of course, it begins in medias res. All epic poems, like major, the Iliad, the Odyssey, the Aeneid, are three big examples that come to mind. They all start, and like the action's already begun, and the hero's in the middle of doing something. Okay, well, in this case, Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, in the beginning when God was creating the heavens and the earth, then the earth was empty and void, and God said, let there be light. So it wasn't created, it was being created, something was already happened, there was a void and an emptiness that was already there, and out of that the creation occurred. So, I mean, basically that's gap theory, so I'm espousing gap theory to answer this question. there it is if you want a simple answer. But it's basically saying something happened there, but you're just not told what happened there. And that's how all poems do it, really. And then somewhere in the middle, you have a flashback or an anime, you know, you don't know what's going on. And then there's just a flashback episode. Oh, this is what's really going on. Fate Stay Night just did it last episode. Like, don't really know what's going on with Berserker and Ilya. And then you get a whole episode and suddenly, wow, you've changed my perception of this character entirely. And that's kind of what the Bible does. If you want to know details about it, I mean, there's pretty much two main verses, Isaiah 14:12 and Ezekiel 28:11-19. And those are basically just comparing Lucifer to a corrupt king, in this case, the king of Tyre and Sidon, and saying that his desire for wealth and to be above God, a reference to the Tower of Babel and human civilization overreaching itself with technology and ultimately destroying itself. And so that's where the Bible says, to quote quickly from Ezekiel 28, the word of the Lord came to me, O mortal, intone a funeral dirge over the king of Tyre and say to him, thus says the Lord God, you were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and flawless and beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was yours, etc. Gold was yours. And then basically, you got too proud, this is a paraphrase, and you were cast down and turned into ashes. So in biblical metaphor, off stage that I was mentioning earlier equates to before the foundation of the world, or, you know, in the void, all metaphorical, of course. And so this is the garden of God, or, you know, God himself, the entity, the Big Bang, whatever impetus created the fundamental energy that started us off. And, you know, that just basically embraces a Kabbalistic understanding of the Old Testament, which is the actual commentaries of the Hebrews who wrote the Old Testament. And, you know, that's basically how they viewed it. They viewed Genesis, the 7 days of creation, as a metaphor. And the first three days were principles of creation. The second 3 days were the actual creation. So that would be pre-Big Bang, or the organization of the particles that produced the energy. And then the next three would be the organization according to the four laws. You know, and then, of course, you have the day of rest. That's another question. But basically, yeah, more or less. I mean, like, these questions, man. Like, how do you even answer these?
Yeah, I'm going to have to, as great as that answer is, Sean, I'm going to have to stop you from answering any others to give some time for Charles.
I didn't write down anything else because I knew it would take forever. So you guys, like, have a field day with that, because I'm done.
I'm going to let Alex respond if he wants, but I just quickly want to mention a couple of things. And one is that Pray to Me Instead sent me another list of questions that I'll post the answers to on my Tumblr account.
Okay.
So I'll get a little bit more into it at thetangles.tumblr.com. Also, I think what's interesting is I think these questions being posed to us kind of point at the fundamental difference, I think, between Christians and non-Christians, and that, you know, there's a... Well, I'll give my example. When I was agnostic, which I was for a number of years, I had a lot of trouble with a lot of different questions with the concept of God, with religion and Christianity, especially with the idea of, with the God of the Old Testament. But I think when I came to faith, when grace really struck me and I accepted the concept that God is God and, you know, I'm not, and that my value comes from God and not by my limited and faulty works, that it really kind of flipped a switch. It was kind of the idea of being blind and now being able to see, kind of like Saul on the road to Tarsus. And that's what happens with a Christian. You know, we begin to better understand scripture and God. And when we get questions like this, there's this, I don't know how to explain it, where a non-Christian might say, you know, where are your answers? And that I don't feel threatened, or I don't feel like I need to find the answer to these questions. I don't feel angry that, you know, someone is trying to do getcha with me, or, you know, I'm not saying that's what the writer is doing here, but instead, this gives me an opportunity to say, wow, let me find out more about my God, you know, where it makes me want to search my knowledge base better. You know, some of these questions are things I've long considered, you know, and that Christians really need to consider. But some of the questions, like, was Joseph transgender? I was like, huh? What is that?
I'm assuming that's like a joke question at the end. I mean, I don't even know. Like, he wore a colorful coat and was really creative.
Right, but I don't think it is. I mean, because, you know, we have a whole generation of young people where, you know, transgender issues are so important, right?
Sure.
And so, like, you know, I don't think it's a joke question. I think it's something that people are seriously talking about somewhere out there in the internet, you know. So, but suddenly it gives me an opportunity to say, yeah, let me find out more about my God, because my faith has a foundation where it's like, oh, you know, my faith is not suddenly shaken because of this, but it's wonderful. It gives me a chance to really, really dig into this. I do want to talk about Lazarus' questions, which are very much pertaining to what we do on Beneath the Tangles. But before we go into that, I want to give Alex a chance to respond or talk about what he wants to talk about in regards to these kind of issues here.
All right. So I kind of interjected early on about you're trying to have your cake and eat it too, Sean. And I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit more here.
Yeah, go for it.
You've talked about how you've researched all of these epic poems and how a lot of this ties into the Bible, how it predates the Bible, and how there's laws of morality and philosophy that also are in the Bible that predate the Bible. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of themes actually are a big I have read, I guess, kind of the Cliff Notes versions of some of these epic poems, because I don't have the time or the will to, or even the need, I should say, to get into the nitty-gritty of all of these epic poems, like the Iliad or the Code of Hammurabi or all these kinds of different other things like that.
Sure.
But the Epic of Gilgamesh. But because all of these things do predate the Bible, and the Bible is not this kind of watershed document that kind of paved the way for morality, it kind of leads you to question, well, maybe people were just coming up with these good ideas, since we had some really smart people along the way who also did make a few mistakes because they didn't know where the sun went at night either. So you're going to expect them to make some mistakes along the way, because we were trying to feel our way out of tribalism and move into a more modern society. And so when you say that the Bible is both literal and metaphorical, I don't see how you can reconcile those two things. It either needs to be completely literal, it needs to be completely metaphorical, because I don't see how it jives with the two worlds. And let me get to a main point as to why I reject the Bible as a literal document, and kind of why it almost has to be a literal document, I think, for Christianity to be true. Now, why did Jesus come in the New Testament? Well, what was his goal? What was his purpose? Well, his explicit purpose was to forgive original sin. That was why he came. He came to be the sacrifice to forgive our sins, to forgive Adam and Eve of this sin that was on humanity from the very first two people that got passed down through the generations.
Sure.
Are we in agreement at least on that then?
Perhaps.
Okay. Let's just say that we're in agreement.
For the sake of the conversation, yes, I agree.
Okay. So the Bible has to literally be true for Christianity to be true, because there has to have been a literal Adam and Eve to disobey God, to fall from grace, to acquire original sin, have original sin passed down to the generations, to eventually be forgiven by Jesus. And if it's not literal, Jesus is pointless. There's no need for this. And because I'm very science-oriented, I'm very science-minded, you're talking about the Big Bang, you're talking about evolution, mm-hmm. you don't deny that these things are true, and I agree with you, these things are true, these things actually did happen, and because I think that the Bible does not literally express these things in a way that is not unequivocally unambiguous, and it needs to have specifically given us foreknowledge, I think, and not some kind of metaphor that leads to these things, because you can take any epic work and bend it enough if you want to say that, oh, this metaphor was referencing this, because all throughout history we've had doomsday prophesizers lawyering the Bible to say, oh, we had all this stuff that happened in the past, so we can use that to predict this in the future. And like, well, yeah, you could have used that to tie into anything. So I don't think that you can use these metaphors as a reference to literal scientific things that we know happen and we know exist. And so to get back to the question here that we were kind of addressing is, pray to me instead is putting these questions in here to kind of literally show that we have this dichotomy that we have to either interpret the Bible as 100% literal and science is wrong, or 100% metaphorical and has nothing to do with science.
And see, that like, I understand what you're saying, but I can't agree with that, because I feel like the best way to communicate science to someone who doesn't have scientific instruments would be a story, would be something that is easy to remember, that can be passed down, that's interesting on its own merits as a story, while also containing very high-level information that will be useful to someone who has a computer or who can see with a telescope and actually know what's going on. And in that sense, I feel that the Bible itself is very careful to point out that the way God, the God of the Bible, works is through progressive revelation. You don't get it all at once. And that's actually what the Bible equates to the devil in the beginning, is that it coins it in terms of sexuality and, you know, carnal knowledge. But what it's getting at is it's an information dump. You have whatever you want to call Adam and Eve. You have these innocent figures, these naive figures, and all of a sudden, all of this knowledge, the knowledge to be like God, which a lot of people would say that's what science is looking for. In fact, you have the transhumanist movement right now trying to fuse humans and human brains with technology to transcend mortal limitations and live forever. I mean, that's actually being talked about. That's actually being developed right now. And, you know, that is equated with a fundamental evil. Getting an info dump and being confused because you don't know what's right and wrong because there's so much info, I mean, that is equated with bad in the Bible. And what is equated with God in the Bible is, over a period of time, slowly and very carefully communicating concepts by little tidbits that are revealed along the way to guide someone to a greater understanding. And I do not believe that that is inconsistent with the universe and science, because the universe is so vast and enormous that you would have to do it that way. If you gave someone living 7,000 years ago all that info at once, they wouldn't even know what to do with it, let alone process it. And, you know, so in that sense, I don't see the contradiction that you're insisting is there. And I also don't see why there's such a big issue between literal and figurative. And this is the reason for that, and then I'll stop. The Bible has very clear breakoff points. Certain portions of the Bible talk about the actual state of Israel, what they did or didn't do, how many people they had or didn't have. Now, whether all that information is accurate or not, I'm not even referring to that. I'm just referring to the people who wrote it intended it to be scribal in nature. They intended it to be an actual record of some event. And then there are other portions of the Bible that are very clearly not supposed to be taken literally, like Revelation, for example, or any of the prophetic works. Like, their prophecy, their mystic revelation, their poetry, or their spirituality. So if you try to take that literally, you're going to end up tying yourself in a knot.
For the sake of the podcast, I'm going to say, Charles and Alex, if you want to give a quick rebuttal to that, go ahead. And then I'd like to more specifically address Lazarus' question by applying what we got from our first question, which I think fairly well answered it already.
Yeah, sure.
Plus what we've been talking about now.
Okay.
I'll just go ahead and let Alex respond.
Okay. if you don't mind, relatively quickly, so we can get to our last question.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Give Alex the last word.
I often encounter situations like this where we're at a disagreement as an atheist and as a Christian, and we have it's clear that we have both looked at the evidence. We are looking at the same evidence, but we have drawn different conclusions from it, and that is something that I, as an atheist, kind of realize is I'm not going to change your mind on this, but I think that we have a respect for each other, that if we had come at this from maybe a different angle at some point in our own past, our own experiences, maybe we would have had enough respect for each other to change our minds if we had been looking at it from a different way, perhaps a different set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I can appreciate a dissenting opinion. I respect it more when it comes from someone who has actually done their homework. And I think that's all that we can say about that. We can't really progress any further. We are kind of at an impasse as to moving forward with this.
Certainly not within the limits of an hour. I'll give you that.
Okay,
Charles,
so...
Did Charles want to go, or are you just going to...
I think Charles was leaving that for Alex. Okay. But the reason we combined these two questions, and obviously we got kind of brought into a tangent on the first part of it, but what we've been talking about this entire podcast relates directly to what Lazarus asked. So I'm going to restate Lazarus' question. And then, Charles, would you mind giving the first response?
Sure.
Okay, so Lazarus asked, some parts in anime transparently praise or trash religion, but do you ever feel that you are stretching your observation of certain anime to put a religious spin on it? And do you ever feel that maybe these views are not always shared by your other religious readers, even by those of the same faith?
Okay, so this is a good question because it's a chief criticism of our website. I would say that, absolutely we do, and at the same time we don't. I don't make any qualms about applying our beliefs to series where those beliefs were never intended. But in some of my best moments, I think this is true for all our writers, we hit upon some profound truth. And as a Christian, I think that's because, my personal belief is that humanity, if Christianity is to be taken as true, humanity is all in need of grace. We all have the same human story of sin and the need for redemption. And so when we see entertainment, especially entertainment where you have where you can get serious, as anime often does, where you have a number of episodes to explore themes and different issues, we often see these same kind of ideas coming up over and over and over. And I think that's because the creators of these series are just like every other human. We're reaching for mercy, we're reaching for grace, and we're sinners. So these are kind of the same ideas that we pull out in many different series. But at the same time, there are a lot of posts that I put it into our digital trash can because I'm making too much of a stretch, because I'm trying to make connections that, at the end of the day, sometimes I've written an entire post, I'm like, yeah, this is no good. I don't think of it as spin as much as applying my belief, which believing in God, as the only God is what I believe, I think is true. Another part of the question has to do with, are these if these views are shared by other religious readers, or even those within our same faith? I was reminded of one young man who's been commenting on our blog recently that believes that the Christian God does exist, but he purposely chooses not to follow him. And that's brought a lot of great discussion to our site. We want to encourage that. And so even though our writings don't necessarily apply to him, he still found something compelling about what we're writing about. And I think a lot of non-Christian readers have found the same. But even for those who are Christians, I know we don't share a lot of the same beliefs. I think part of this is because we're at perhaps different levels of maturity. I know the me 10 years ago would have probably learned a lot from Beneath the Tangles. and certainly on the other hand, we just disagree. Even among our writers here, we don't agree on every point. Sean and Tim and Medieval Otaku, for instance, I don't necessarily believe a lot of what they believe, but we do have the same fundamental beliefs. And we don't, share everything, or we don't represent Christendom as a whole. We can't do that. But we have a set of core beliefs that are given on our site, and we stick to that. And we leave a lot of room for discussion.
I think that was a pretty accurate and succinct answer. So if you guys don't mind, I think we're going to move on to our last two questions in the time we have left.
Yeah, go for it.
At this point, I'm going to have to leave you all. This podcast has run pretty long for our typical podcast. There was a lot to discuss tonight, but I was glad to join you while I can. So thank you, Alex, again for joining us. And thank you for having me, JP and Sean.
Yeah, it was great having you, Charles. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for being on, Charles.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care, Charles.
Thanks.
Okay, so our last two questions for today are geared specifically for Alex. The first question we have is from Taylor Ramage. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. Of taylorramage.wordpress.com, Taylor asks, Christian anime fans often talk about the portrayal of Christians or Christian/religious beliefs in anime. Sometimes those portrayals are good and sometimes not. Have you found any examples, either in anime or any other kind of media, of atheists or atheism portrayed as negative or evil, excluding blatantly Christian media, such as God is not dead? On the flip side, have you found any stories that you feel portrays atheism or atheists fairly slash accurately slash positively?
Yeah, this was kind of a difficult one to narrow down to anime because the nature of Japanese culture is so inherently kind of unbiased towards religion or non-religion anyways that it's really hard to find any clearly defined examples of it. But I did stumble across an article recently that I read about a video game called Bravely Default. Are you too familiar with that at all?
I have passing familiarity. I actually have it, but I haven't beaten it yet. I've played some of it, and then I've watched some walkthroughs of portions of it. I don't know what the ending is, though, but I mean, if you want to talk about it, go for it.
All right. Well, the reason I'm bringing it up here is because it's one of the few things that I can think of that is relevant to the first part of this question as atheists or atheism being portrayed as a negative or evil. And in Bravely Default, there is a church that is called the Crystal Orthodoxy. And there is a nation that is trying to destroy the Crystal Orthodoxy. They're called the Anti-Crystalists. And they are essentially atheists in this plot. They are basically, or maybe more accurately say, anti-theists, where they are saying that the religion is bad and everything that has taught us is a lie, and they're trying to stamp out this religion. They very nearly do by the beginning of the game. And your party is kind of the last little holdout of religion in this world that is fighting against the evil atheists that are trying to stamp your party out as the last ray of hope for this world. It is later revealed that both sides have good and bad to them, which, of course, is very much about my philosophy, which is why I love this game so much. There's good and bad in everything. So I think that it is very much, it's very deep in that way. But that's an example that I can think of where initially, in the story at least, the atheists' side of this war is portrayed as being very, very evil. But on the flip side, where it portrays atheism or atheists accurately or positively, I kind of had a hard time thinking of anything that was specifically pertaining to humanists or atheists like that in any kind of fiction that I've watched. What was it? There was a movie a while back. It was a live-action independent film. Gosh, I forgot what it was called. It was kind of like, it's called The Cliff or something like that. It was about a the main character was an atheist, and he he had some neighbors move in across the hall from him in his apartment who were very evangelical Christians. And it got wind to them that he was an atheist, and they started kind of harassing him a little bit. And all he really kind of wants to do is just live his life on his own, be happy in his own way, but they're kind of attacking him and making his life miserable. So at one point, he finally has to kind of set down with this couple and explain to them his beliefs, that he's not evil, that he doesn't think that he's fallen, and that he's a good guy. And he can't convince the husband, but he does kind of end up convincing the wife. And this evangelical Christian's wife kind of turns on him, and that kind of leads to a conflict between that leads up to the climax of the movie. I won't spoil anything beyond that, but that's I think it where it was blatantly kind of went out of its way to make an atheist the good guy of the story. But I can't think of anything in anime that specifically makes atheists in a positive light. Can you guys think of anything that
I actually can? And I know I said
I've got maybe
moderate.
A video game. So if you've got some anime,
no.
Go for it.
Well, what's funny is we already talked about it, and it's one of my favorites, and it's Kino's Journey.
Right.
I mean, I think Kino's Journey fairly clearly portrays Kino as a humanist, more or less. And you see several episodes mm-hmm. where Kino goes into various cultures that are very religious and points out the inherent problems in them. And like
That's
I said,
one, yeah.
I love Kino's Journey. As a Christian, I love Kino's Journey. But I would say that's a fairly straightforward example of it.
Yeah, I think that definitely.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. It didn't really pop out to me until you kind of pointed it out, because it's Kino is just so neutral. That this is such a neutral character in her biases and loyalties and judgments that it just kind of didn't really stand out to me as being like this an atheist character. I think that you pointed out, yeah, as more of a humanist character.
I was gonna say, and this may be a stretch because I went through a lot of games that I played, and I was just thinking, man, like what? Because a lot of, especially RPGs, are longer games that tend to delve into philosophy and politics of religion and civilization. Tend to be some kind of a JRPG, and they almost always deal with gods and demons or some supernatural power, whether it be magic or otherwise. So it was hard for me to think of anything until I came across the Parasite Eve series. And then I realized there isn't really any God. There's no real spiritual powers in that game. It's now obviously it's fantastical in its presentation, but the entire series revolves around just evolution and basically humans and human society being threatened by the fact that they may not be the dominant species, and that in fact portions of them, I think it was the mitochondria, I think that was the plot. It's been a while since I played it. The actual energy source for the human body in the cell at the cellular level actually in that game is its own organism that's actually enslaved to the human body. And so the actual organism, the mitochondria, just decide like, we're not going to give you energy more. We want to be our own entities. And so the game is actually about directing the course of evolution, and God is never there's no God or devil involved. It's all purely biology. And the main character is a female cast in the role of basically like an NYPD police detective. It's got kind of like an 80s like Terminator type flair, but basically she's the objective observer, and she's not religious at all. And she basically is the guide through this world of trying to steer human culture in a positive direction without gods, purely through willpower and community. And I think that's a very humanist perspective. So, you know, I would list that as an example in video games of a positive portrayal.
Well, our last question for the episode today is a pretty fair follow-up, I would say, and this is also geared towards Alex. Taylor, the same asker from the previous question, asks, are there any stories that portray religion positively that you like or would consider a favorite?
Well, kind of going back to the previous answer, Bravely Default is also, like I said, you are basically playing a party that is the last holdout of a religious sect. I very much enjoyed that. Let's see.
Slim pickings, I guess.
It kind of goes back to one of the first questions that we had talked about as well, that there are many kinds of stories in anime that have these religious themes in them that, depending on maybe your biases or your preferences, you can interpret as being a positive religion or a negative religion, depending on how you want to look at it, really. But one of the things that really kind of stood out for me when I started reading this question, goes back to one of my favorite religious quotes in an anime. It very much ties into what I think what God really is, the concept of God, well, what it really is to people. And this goes to an anime called Kamisama Dolls. Are you familiar with this anime at all?
I'm not. I'm sorry.
I'm not either.
Okay, it wasn't a very popular anime, but I felt that it dealt with some very interesting themes. Let me go ahead and explain a little bit so we have some context here.
Sure.
In this anime, there is kind of this hidden village that dates back to... It's set in Japan, and it's this hidden village in the mountains dates back centuries to tribal traditions in Japan. And what they do in this village is there is a succession ritual in... the head families of this village, where they pass down these idols to from father to son, mother to daughter, father to daughter, mother to son, along these bloodlines, basically. And in these bloodlines, they have the power to psychically control these statues, these idols. So the idols can physically come to life through the will of their keepers, basically. And they worship these idols as gods, basically, hence Kamisama dolls. That is what this anime is about. It's about these people who can control these idols, who... to varying degrees, some people say, "Okay, we're a modern people now. These are just idols. There's nothing spiritual about them. It's just a tradition that we've been following. We will continue to follow because that's what we like to do. We want to keep our heritage strong." Right. And there's other side of it where people are saying, "No, these are gods. We must worship them. If we don't worship them, there will be chaos, and it will be the downfall of our civilization." So, but that's kind of ancillary to the story here, but that's kind of how the whole plot goes. It is about these two factions within this village kind of going at each other, trying to decide, both in combat and in through philosophy, whether or not these idols are actually spiritual in some way. That's the kind of the general plot summary of what Kamisama Dolls is about. Getting back to the question now, what kind of positive things do I think about religion and gods? Kamisama Dolls has one of my favorite quotes, and this quote goes, the little girl who has recently inherited this idol was told by one of the older adherence to of this tradition that the gods are evil or good inherently in and of themselves, and that he claims that he has inherited an evil god, so he has to uphold that evil god's intentions. He has to stay in line with what that god embodies. And this little girl is torn between these conflicts to where whether she should be her own person or whether she should try to follow the story behind her idol and the traditions of that idol. And what her brother comes to her and says that... gods are good based on our own actions, because she is literally controlling this god. So if she wants her god to be a good god, or if she wants her god to be a bad god, it's through her choice, it's through her actions. And I think that kind of carries over to, it's a really good metaphor for how a lot of religions are viewed today. So he says to her, if you want your god to be a good god, it will be a good god. If you want your god to be a bad god, it will be a bad god through your actions. So, and that's kind of how I look at different sects of Christianity or Islam or Judaism or Hinduism or Buddhism. It is the actions and beliefs of the adherents of these religions that make these religions good or bad, like a lot of other philosophies you could mention. And I think that is one of the most profound things that I have ever heard about religion, is that the adherents of that religion, the believers, are the ones who make their gods good or evil.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of synergy between that, well, in James, which for a lot of people is one of the more difficult books in the New Testament, because it says faith without works is dead. And a lot of people don't like that, because a lot of individuals who get into religion get into it for the complex, for the community, to be like you were saying, and it sounds like a really interesting show, I'll probably end up watching it. I inherited this idol. I inherited this tradition. I'm part of a family. I have unity. You know what I mean? Like, I'm part of this system. It's already established. I can adhere to it, and I can feel a sense of purpose and belonging prepackaged, given to me. And some elements, I would say, personally, of the Catholic Church remind me of that, in the sense of this monolithic entity with all of these traditions. And I know one person in particular that I... a pretty good acquaintance with, that literally was like, I became a Catholic because I wanted to have traditions. Like, and then I just automatically believe it just so I can have traditions and feel comfortable. And that's an extreme example. Most people won't honestly admit to that. So it's kind of interesting that this person did, but you know, I feel like that's a proclivity that a lot of people have, why they get involved in any community, not just religion. And so to have something in the Bible, in the New Testament specifically, say, all that faith, all those little things you like to do and all those traditions, they mean nothing if you're not doing it. And I mean, that's pretty much exactly what that quote is also saying. And I really feel like, to put it in terms of my personal faith, God is an action verb. You know what I mean? Like, people like to say Yahweh or Jehovah, but God's name is I Am, which in the Hebrew, it's just a verb. It's an action verb, meaning doing currently right now. And then, you know, it clarifies, did it in the past, doing it now, and will do it in the future, which is just consistency of good action. You know what I'm saying? And so in that sense, I think it agrees very much with the quote you brought up. And, you know, I would agree with you. I think that's a really cool way to look at it, and sounds like a really interesting show.
Well, as we're wrapping up this episode, could the two of you maybe give kind of like your 60-second wrap-up? It can pertain to maybe some of the broader themes we've talked about.
Do you want to start, Alex? I mean, I can go. It doesn't really matter to me.
I guess I can kind of do a little bit of a summary.
Okay.
I kind of came into anime as I was coming out of religion. So I actually look at anime as a contributor to my atheism, which then became humanism, because the culture of Japan, of course, is so secular. The Japanese people don't think about religion in their daily lives so much as we do here in America. And that carries over into, of course, naturally into their media, which includes anime. So anime has this, I think, secular spirit to it, for lack of a better terminology, that it doesn't have these preconceived biases that a lot of works in America have to do about tiptoeing around religion as being a sensitive topic. So when I started watching a lot of anime, and I saw that religion was, that there was a culture and an entire country where religion was not this taboo topic, it was kind of such a non-controversial thing that it kind of naturally led me out to question a lot of the things that I had believed when I was younger, and let me ease my transition away from dogma and into a more a balanced philosophy, I think. So that is kind of why I continue to watch anime to this day, and why I tend to be that little fun little thorn in the side of Charles, challenging him to really say, okay, did you really mean what those things that you're seeing in anime? Did you really see those Christian things, or are you just kind of following your biases that you already had? Because I kind of came out of where he is now into where I am today because I saw anime as non-religious. Not that it is atheistic or religious, just as being so neutral as to being unbiased towards either world. And so that is kind of why I follow anime to this day, and why I think that it is inherently a moving force for secularism.
That is a pretty interesting wrap-up, because I would say I actually came from a position of agnosticism bordering on atheism at the time that I really got into anime, and actually ended up coming back to a position of faith as a direct result of some of the things I saw in anime. But I would say that I exchanged religion that was given to me as a tradition when I was younger for spirituality and philosophy, which is a lot more fluid and dynamic. And the secular nature that you described about anime and the fairness and the open-mindedness was actually a huge factor in me broadening my horizons beyond what I was taught and really starting to question what I had been given and the works of spirituality all across history and culture, and say, all right, I'm not going to say this is all wrong by default, but if it is true, and if there is merit to it, then there needs to be a thorough investigation, which is an investigation still ongoing. But I would agree with you that I really enjoy the medium of anime for the fact that every once in a while, you know, it'll break a taboo irreverently. It just doesn't care. And I think that's great because, like I alluded to earlier, I don't like it when people tiptoe around issues, or even worse, they just stereotype issues and then leave it at that. I think that's almost worse in a way. And so,
Sean, yep. On that point, we agree.
Oh, man, that might be the end of the episode. but no, like, I'm not making light of that at all. Like, I am with you 100% on what you said from the complete opposite direction, but definitely a key factor in me watching anime and continuing to question matters of religion. And if I were to put it in a capsule, I would say tearing down religious dogma and replacing it with active ideology and practice that is positive and productive.
Well, that was a good couple wrap-ups from the two of you guys. Man, well, as we're wrapping up this episode now, it was really, really great having the two of you together, and Charles, too, unfortunately, had to leave early, of course. This is definitely one of the more intriguing, perhaps controversial episodes we've had. But I hope for our listeners that you got something out of it. I know I did. I'm sure you were happy to hear less of me this time, maybe.
I had fun with this conversation, definitely. I always enjoy going back to these. As I have matured, when you kind of change your philosophies, I think, whether it's towards atheism, towards religion, once you adopt a new philosophy, you kind of, you get that zealous, you're kind of a zealot for that new thing that you're with. It's fresh with you. You want to tell the world what you've discovered. And that was a much younger version of myself. And I have since tempered myself on that, and so I don't engage in these kinds of conversations as much as I used to. And so it was a lot of fun kind of going back to this in a in this kind of setting, and maybe being a little bit less heated about it than I was when I was younger.
it's great. I love that we're able to have this kind of atmosphere on our podcast, and I hope on our site, and I hope that's the kind of atmosphere that we appear to have to our readers and our listeners. Well, in any case, if you'd like to read more of our work, be sure to check out beneaththetangles.com, and, of course, check out Alexander's sites at Anime of Tomorrow and Affinity for Anime, all of which will be linked on beneaththetangles.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll tune in next month for The Tangles.
Great having you, Alex.
Yeah, likewise, Sean.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of The Tangles, official companion podcast to beneaththetangles.com. Be sure to check out our full site for more articles and analyses on the intersection of otaku culture and faith. If you would like to submit a question, send an email to thetangles@outlook.com. Also, be sure to follow our Twitter at Anime Tangles, and like our Facebook page, Beneath the Tangles, and rate and review The Tangles on iTunes. Featured opening and closing songs are Japanese Dream by Duke Ellington's Orchestra and Blue Piano Stomp by Johnny Dodds, available in the public domain. Again, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll tune in next time for The Tangles.
All right, that's an extra long rap.
Oh, man. Yeah. Man. Oh, man.